You're listening to Face Off, episode 62, recorded March 28th, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. And they are very helpful. We try to catch as much as we can when we do our post-production on the show so that you guys can go and find all that nuggets of information. I still have a cold. I've had a cold almost 2 weeks now, and I really want to get rid of it.
That's just terrible. Yeah. I'm glad I got over mine, if that helps.
My voice sounds terrible. But actually, I was playing around earlier, and I did find a voice that is unaffected by the show. So let me know if I should do it. So you ready? Why, hello, Mark. No, that was terrible. I had a voice. I did, and it worked really well. It didn't sound like it had a cold at all. It sounded nothing like me, but I was really excited about it, but I don't know.
Well, somebody that had a good voice was Stephen Bristol, the person we interviewed last episode. We got a lot of great feedback from him. A lot of people liked his interview, and so
yeah, I was really excited about that because he had some really cool ideas, and he seems like someone who's been doing it a long time, really sort of set in his ways, and has decided that, you know, like sometimes I chase the fads. Like I hear something cool, and I'm like, oh, that's the best thing in the world. And he's been doing it a long time enough that he says, you know, well, I don't think that is the best thing in the world. I think, you know, maybe we should go this way or, you know, and I really respect that.
Yeah. Or maybe, you know, parts of it are the best thing in the world, but not the whole thing. You know, take everything, you know, with a grain of salt or whatever.
Yeah.
And I guess, see what works for you.
We did forget to note you are on Skype again this week. We've been Skyping like crazy.
Yeah. So there will be some. Yeah. We'll be talking over top of each other and all that delayed stuff.
That's okay. But it'll be more like our normal conversations off the air where we talk over each other pretty much all the time anyways. Anyways, let's get into our news and follow-ups. We actually have a really cool follow-up. What episode was it? Episode 59, we did a little question and answer episode called Revision Control in the Workplace, where Brian Barthold actually emailed us asking how to get revision control, you know, in his workplace. And we actually got a note back from Brian saying, you know, hi, Jade, Mark. Sorry to not respond sooner. Being a Hoosier, I was caught up in March Madness. That's going crazy right now, actually, all the basketball. Yes, I did catch the show. I've been meaning to thank you for the response. This is awesome. I was blown away you answered the question in the podcast. I think it's really cool how you connect directly with you guys. To answer some questions in the podcast, yes, I was referring to Dreamweaver and specifically CS4. We use this as our primary IDE, and I saw that it did run Subversion. Currently, I'm working Tortoise HG, trying to learn the basics of this, and then hope to share this with my coworkers. The use of index1 or index.back.php is way too familiar. I hope to fully be using version control system soon, although it will take some time. Again, keep up the good work, and thanks for the response. Thanks, Brian. So that's great. He's actually trying. He's going to learn HG, which is a great revision control system.
Yeah, he's going to take one of our suggestions, two of them, which is, you know, maybe try out the GUI so you don't have to learn the command and the revision control concept at the same time. And then also learn it yourself and then maybe pass it on to your coworkers. So I'm glad to see that we, you know, hopefully we'll, you know, he'll have some success in converting some of his coworkers. And
yeah, I hope to hear back soon. He's going to say, we're all using Mercurial and it's awesome and we never overwrite each other's code and I can go back three versions without blinking an eye. You know, it's really great. Yeah, it's definitely a step.
I'm sorry. Hopefully he doesn't have too many of those dot backs and the index-1 version 2. Yeah. Hopefully we can get rid of that.
Oh, it's so funny though. You got to get over that. And I even sometimes to this day, I'll be like, oh, I'll just copy this dot back. And I'm like, wait a minute, it's in my revision control. So I should be able to go in and mess it up as much as I want, not worry about it. It's hard to get over those habits. It really is. I struggle with it even. So don't sweat it.
Yeah. Actually, my cousin was over this weekend and I was kind of explaining one of my programs that I wrote, and I was like, you know, there's this, I did this refactoring, I got rid of some stuff. He's like, oh, well, what was it? And I kind of explained it, and I was like, you know what, let me just show you. And I went into HG and reverted back like 30 versions before, and be like, well, see this piece of code here? Yeah. And then reverted back to the original, see how I just took this piece, and I guess I could have done a diff too.
Yeah, you could even diff it, man.
But yeah, so yeah, it's good to see that we have some listeners that are going to take some of our advice. And I hope, like you said, I hope we hear back from them and hopefully it's good news.
Yeah. And I also want to let everyone know, if you have a question, send it to us now. We love to get questions. And honestly, answering Brian's question, was a really fun episode. It really helped focus us. So if you have any questions or anything you want us to check out, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback and let us know, because those are really the sort of fun episodes to do. All right, let's get into our geek tool. So our geek tool this week is I just got one of these. It's an Omron pedometer. We have a link to it in the show notes if you want. It's like $6, but any pedometer will work. And these are just, they've been around forever. And I decided that I wanted to know, how much do I walk in a day? Because being a programmer, and as many of our listeners are, we sit at a desk all day. And there's a lot of sort of new research coming out and things like that, saying that just the fact that we're now tend to be a species that sits on our butt all day is definitely not good for our health.
Does it count if you're wearing the pedometer and bouncing up on your exercise ball you sit on?
You know, I would actually say we can count that. I would think that's legal counting, because it's still, you know, it's just as much work as a step, but I don't know where it was. This is totally out of the blue. I don't know, because I don't know. I just got mine and I haven't had a chance to go to work with it or anything like that. But I heard something is like 200,000 steps a day, or maybe it was 20. I can't remember. But this is where the usefulness of me comes out, right? It's either 200 or 20,000, one of the two.
So a pedometer. So this measures the amount of steps that you take.
Yeah,
is that?
So this is really simple, like $6. You can adjust it if you think that it's counting steps too much. You can sort of adjust it, tell it how much shock it wants before it counts a step. But it's just really, you know, sort of a get up and walk around some more. Walk around the office, take a walk outside on your break or something, because really just walking around can help your general health a lot. And it gets you, you know, when you're stuck on a problem, sometimes you just walk around and clear your head. It can really help you, you know, think of a solution that you might not when you're just staring at code and about ready to pull your hair out. You know, it's nice to get fresh air, get out of a stuffy office. Maybe you won't, you know, slap one of your coworkers or something because you get a little break and you can go relax outside. So just get up and walk around more. And this is a good way to sort of gauge how much you're walking around more or less.
So I did a quick informal study. I'm looking at Yahoo Answers, and the average was 7,000, and then another answer was 3,000 to 5,000. And for a tidbit, 10,000 steps is roughly 5 miles.
Whoa, okay, so not 200,000.
20,000 could be a little bit much.
Yeah, that's still like, but that's, I can't even remember what the 20,000 was. I think it was something like, I think it was like a study where basically anybody in the study who was in like sort of good general health was walking over 20,000 steps a day or something like that. I can't remember what it was. It was definitely not like a correlation or anything. It was just more meant to say, mm-hmm. like, you know, they're kind of like just hinting at maybe getting up and walking around more really helps your overall health. So bro science, as we've talked about in the past, this is absolutely no scientific bounds that I can quote or cite. But walking around can't be bad for you, right?
Sure.
Probably better than sitting on your duff all day. I know I need to get up and walk around more. I'm actually really excited for summer because it's going to be hiking season.
Yeah. Camping. All right. Well, that's interesting. It's like a geek tool. You know, you're just interested in it's like a stat. It's like an analytics.
Totally. Yeah. I'm going to keep a Google Doc spreadsheet with like how many steps I take a day and probably start graphing it and stuff like that. They should make like a cool Bluetooth one or something so that I could just load it up into an API or something. That would be pretty cool. Anyways, let's get into our web apps. Our first web app this week is called Variably SFW. And if you've been surfing the internet any amount of time, you probably know what SFW means. It means safe for work. And it's typically used in the context of NSFW, which means that something is not safe for work. So if you are friends with people like Mark, you are getting all kinds of links all day of varying quality and appropriateness. And so what this app does, which is you can get to variablysfw.appspot.com, it lets you put in the URL that your friend sent you, and basically you can use this sort of little slider to like basically it starts with a black shield over the entire web page, and the slider sort of reduces the opacity of it so that you can see more and more of the page. So you can really just get, you know, like let a little bit of it through to see if, you know, make sure there's not anything really bad on the page. And then you can sort of slide it the more you get to it. And then you can click go to the web page and it'll take you to the actual web page once it is safe for work.
That's a really neat idea. I wonder how hard it would be to implement something where it disabled sound. It'd have to be OS dependent or, you know, outside the browser.
Well,
but like,
you should always so have you don't headphones get like on. Rick, friends like you true. Means you should have headphones on anyways, right?
Well, just so you don't get Rickrolled or, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it depends on where your office is. But, like, sometimes, I don't know. You know, younger generations tend to not be as offended by things as much as older generations. And so, like, if you have an office where there's a lot of traffic and there might be some older people, there's certain things they might be more offended by that we would not really care or think, you know, much of at all. So this is a way to make sure that something is okay before just clicking on the link and having it pop up in your browser, because that can get you in trouble.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is incredibly simple. You just drag it from left to right and it makes it black or visible.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can cool. see if it is safe or not. Our next web app is called the Online Driver's License Search. And so this, I was going to try and play an on-air trick with you, Mark, but I decided to skip it. What this is, being April 1st is coming up, and I don't know if you know what April 1st means, but that is what we call April Fool's Day, which means you need to play jokes on people. And what this is it's a web app that looks really official, and the whole point is you're supposed to tell people, like, yeah, you know, every license plate due to, like, HR or due to House Bill, like, 673, you know, now every license, driver's license in America is visible online. So I know how bad your picture is, right? And then you go to this website and you put in the name and the state and stuff, and it does like this pretend search, and then you go to it and it's like a fake license plate from that state with that person's name and like a picture of a monkey, or I don't know if they do other ones, but when I did it, it was a monkey. And it's just kind of a way to play a joke on someone. So like John Doe, who is a male in the great state of Montana, you know, then you tell them the city, and we're going to say Bozeman, and then we're going to search. And it's like, oh, searching for this license. Oh, there's 250,000 driver's licenses in Montana. And you're like, oh, man, they're searching a big database, and it's taking a long time. And then you click here to continue, and it's like, oh, one record, John Doe and Bozeman. Awesome. I want to view his driver's license.
This is hilarious. You're at Sasquatch Way, bananas chaos. eyes bulge, hair everywhere.
Yeah.
Your signature. So,
and on the side it says, gotcha. You didn't really think you could view your driver's license online, did you? So the whole point is you send someone to this and they're like, ooh, I'm going to look up my driver's license. And then, you know, it's sort of a silly fun thing. Silly fun app for April Fool's Day. Because I always liked April Fool's Day. I wasn't very good at it, though. I'm not very good at keeping secrets like that. Like, I'm a snickerer. So I would be like, hey, Mark, you should go to license.shorturl.com. Look up your driver's license. You know, I'm terrible at that. So check it out. That is the license plate database search. If you have some news, a follow-up, or a web application you want us to look at, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We want to hear from you guys. Let us know what you want us to check out, because you guys are actually, our listeners have provided some of the best content we've had.
Definitely.
Between like people that we should interview and, you know, like topics and web apps. Help us out, guys. All right. So let's get into our topic, Mark.
So our topic this week is like, you know, support, whether it be if you've got like a web app that you've created, or you've got a product, or you're working for a company that does this, this is kind of like providing support for your customers or your community or whatever you may have.
There are certain things that most people hate, right? Most people really hate like writing documentation, programmers, right? We hate writing documentation. It sucks. Documentation is boring. We hate like inputting data, like data entry is just a pain. It's just monotonous and it's crap. And then the other thing is support. We hate support because in a way it's kind of insulting our work. We feel not really, but like we feel like our work is being insulted. It's never an easy process. Like the people that require support you know, there tends to be two people that require support. There's the people that just know what they're doing, but there's something missing. And then there's people that have no clue what they're doing. And those take up the bulk of the support time. And so when you talk to programmers about support, and I'm one of them, tell you what, support has just been a huge pain in the butt for me. So, but I've done quite a bit of it. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but I've done more of it than people who haven't done a lot of support. I think you and I, and you, same with you, you've done quite a bit of support with your product. I think we can give some people some good tips so that when they do start doing support, they can know these ahead of time and not have to learn the hard way like we did.
Yeah, support's kind of funny. It's almost like if the same question has been asked more than once, it's like, oh my God, this is just terrible.
Don't they know?
Why do I have to answer? Don't they know? Did they read the documentation?
Yeah. So like first assumption is that, well, didn't you read the documentation? No, it doesn't matter. There is a very small percentage of your users that will actually read your documentation, actually look, you know, search your knowledge base for an answer, and just be prepared for that and don't really fault people to it, because I would bet if most people look at their own habits, they do the same thing.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, it may be in the documentation, but the route or the path that you have to take to get to that particular spot is not in line with the customer's thought process, and so they can't find it, or you know. Yeah. So I guess, so let's start off with kind of the email online sort of support.
Yeah.
First. So one of the things that I kind of found out early on when I was doing my support for my product was if I email a little, so there's a kind of a fine line. You don't want to wait more than 24 hours. That definitely makes people mad. but you kind of, especially since I got the Droid, I kind of want to respond to an email immediately as soon as I get it, especially support, because I really do care about my customers and I try to, you know, work through their problems. And usually it is something that I can fix real quick anyways. But I found that if I responded too quickly, it almost turn into like a chat or an IM. It's like, oh, well, what about this? What about that? And instead of them reading the documentation, and I think in the long run, it might have taken that customer longer to implement my product than it might have taken if they would have just went to the documentation and read it, as opposed to just saying, well, what about this? What about this? They would have just read a little bit more. And I feel that if you respond maybe like 2 or 3 or 4 hours after an email, chances are they'll either have fixed their problem or they'll, you know, they'll go and start reading the docs, or and they'll kind of realize that email is for kind of getting the support question, and they need to really think out their questions more as opposed to just writing some quick thing, which leads kind of the next thing. I mean, a lot of times they'll say, oh, this isn't working, and then when they don't say how it's not working or what they tried or what they didn't try or what they expected and what they got. And so half the time, and this is what's frustrating in support. It's like, well, you even, and I would say a lot of times my emails, I'm always, you know, emailing back and saying, well, can you please provide this and provide that, and then I'll help you out.
Yeah.
And so one of the first tips I can give is kind of give the users an ability or add somewhere in your documentation some steps maybe that they can take to help. Expand upon their question or like give you information. Like in my product, I need to know some of the behind the scenes things that are going on. And so I have a function in there that they can use, and it will spit back some really helpful information for me,
which is will help speed up the entire support process.
Yeah. So, and also, you know, responding to emails in a reasonable time can also be related to using something like a support tracker. Sometimes an email, you know, if you get an email and you accidentally read it and then mark it as unread, or you move it, or you know, something, you know, you can lose emails pretty easily. So one good tip is to use a support tracker. We found a PHP one called OS Ticket that seemed to be pretty easy to install.
Yeah, and the cool part about that one is it out of the box just will allow people to email an email address, and that makes a ticket, rather than, you know, like a lot of them, you could say, here's this, you know, support ticket form, fill it out, which is something you need to discuss too, right? I mean, do you just, it's something to think about. Do you want to just do an open-ended email, or do you want to make a contact form that emails you, which then you actually have to provide some of that information. Like, it won't send unless you do. And that's something you want to think about. It will increase the barrier. It increases the barrier of entry for people to just send, little dinky support emails when they just didn't do their work. But at the same time, you might have valid customers with problems that also think that it's a waste of time and when they could have just shot you an email real quick. Something to think about. Also, another thing I want to talk about when you're talking about not answering emails right away too, is as a programmer, sometimes you need to isolate yourself too. And it's hard to balance creating new features versus supporting people and fixing bugs for the old version. And that, that gives you a chance to, if you don't answer right away, then you can say, okay, at 11 o'clock right before I go to lunch, and then at like 4 o'clock before I go home, I do all my support. And that way you can have these blocks of time to really hunker down and work on stuff and then take care of support questions. But support is also a huge time sink.
That's a good point. Like, I should probably implement some sort of blocking time where I do support, and that could eliminate some of these issues where I respond too quickly and I get into this trap where I have to go check my email a lot, and then I feel like I have to respond right away because it's kind of like, not an insult, but it's kind of an insult to, the program or the app that you made, and you're like, well, I got to defend it. I got to get in there.
Yeah, exactly. You get all fired up.
Show this user how to use it. I'm not going to respond and say, hey, you don't know what you're doing, but I'm going to.
Well, you're thinking that though. You're like, you're thinking this idiot doesn't know what he's doing. And I hate these stupid people. It's just support is a really tough issue.
Another thing that I had started doing is in my email, I made a label called support questions. And so, and whenever I finally finished a support threaded conversation, I would mark that as done and put it in my support questions. And then maybe once a month or every other month or so, I'll go into there and find all the different questions that had been asked. And I take the common ones and then put them in the documentation so I don't have to answer them over and over, as long as the people are reading the documentation, that is.
Yeah, and if you're using email, so if you use like Gmail, like I wrote an article at jaderobbins.com on how to set up sort of labels for like action needed and waiting for reply. And another really good thing that really might help your customers is if you do send them an email and you're expecting a reply back, to flag it as waiting for reply. And then if they don't get back, then you can follow up and say, hey, I sent you an email a week ago. Are you still having trouble implementing this? Or are you still having this issue? What's going on? And that will really shine through to them too, because they'll say, oh, well, geez, I'm not just getting an auto reply and he doesn't care. He's actually looking at waiting for me to get a reply back.
Yeah, that's having these labels and stuff, that's kind of having a support ticket system totally. Without the complexity
if you don't have
that
one.
Comes with it. And so another thing is to, allow the users to contribute to the documentation or provide feedback
totally.
That is, not clear enough. And you had a good example, which was the PHP documentation.
Yeah, I use for like all my Ruby and RSpec documentation for Ruby on Rails and RSpec, I use a website called API Doc. And the big difference between API Doc and just your standard documentation isn't very much different, except for API Doc does allow people to post comments. And the PHP documentation, the reason PHP documentation is so helpful is it has the official documentation and then comments with code snippets. So people, I don't know how many times I've looked up something on the PHP documentation and some guy has already figured out how to do it in the comments below or something very similar. And I'm like, oh, well, that's so useful. I mean, that is a very average use case for this function, and you can save people the time of having to read this sort of cryptic documentation. And it's just like, here's how you format a date to look like this. Oh, thank you. I don't, D's and Y's and that format, I can never remember the formatting for PHP. It's just a pain.
Yeah, they give, they'll have some examples up top, a few of them, and then have this whole like a D means the date and the capital Y is the four digit, year, and the lowercase y is this. But then you'll have a really helpful comment down below. It's like, if you want a date in this format, here it is, and then in this format, and here's the ISO standard format for MySQL. If you're doing an insert, do it this way. And
Or like it's deprecated functions. It's like, hey, you know, this is deprecated now, but here's a sort of the way to get that same feature using the new function. You know, it's really helpful. So if you can figure out a way to get people to contribute documentation, and I know a lot of companies, like I have a buddy, Rob Lund, one of our listeners who works at Right Now, and they do really big sort of enterprise support, and a lot of the stuff that they're focusing on now is allowing this sort of cross developer pollination. So like people from one company who are developing Right Now stuff can work with another company who's implementing Right Now, and they can share these sort of ideas on how to make the product better. And it's turned out to be a really big success.
Yeah. Another good tip is, you know, thinking of ways to eliminating a problem as opposed to just fixing one. And I have a pretty good example. I had, you know, quite a few support requests coming in saying, oh, I'm getting this blank, you know, spot where I shouldn't have one. And at first I, you know, added some documentation saying, well, if you're getting a blank, you know, array or whatever, it's probably that you don't have curl installed, that which, you know, is a library that's required for this product. And, you know, like you said, you know, not everybody reads the documentation, and or they're going through and they try some stuff and it doesn't work. And then they don't see the section that says troubleshooting or whatnot. And I thought about it, I was like, well, how can I just totally eliminate this question basically from ever being asked? And that was, I found a function in PHP that can actually detect if curl is, you know, installed. And so what I do is, if it's not installed, I just throw an error message saying, here, go get curl over here, and here's the instructions on how to install it.
Yeah, and I think another thing you kind of touched on there that is really important is creating a common vocabulary. So definitely in your documentation, make sure you use a very strict standard set of vocabulary, because the hardest part for a lot of support is coming to terms and really understanding what they're saying, because you will use different words. But if you have done everything in your part to really make it standard and really so they know that when they say this, you know, it means this, it'll really help out a lot.
It's funny you mentioned that. I actually had some mistakes in my documentation where I had said an access key was the same thing as a developer key versus a developer license versus a username. Like all three of those things were being used even though they meant the same thing. And so, yeah you're definitely right. If you're going to choose a word that represents something that you're talking about, you need to use that same word throughout.
Yeah, totally.
So I think that's it for the online tips that we had. So let's move on to the phone ones.
Support. This is like support is a real stinger for a lot of people. And I've been doing phone support lately at work, and it is so hard to do. People who do, I mean, I understand now why when you call, like, well, first of all, I understand why they try to outsource most of it to India or some other country, because it is the worst job in the world. And I mean, you know, of course, it's just, And so I understand why so much phone support is really terrible, because I've done a little bit of it now and it is so hard to do. So I don't know.
It is. It is, and it's just something that it depends on the project you're doing. A lot of web apps, you could probably get away with not having it. And sometimes you need to do it.
Yeah. There are a lot of people that almost exclusively want to call phone support. I know, especially when you get into these sort of big enterprise-y environments, like at Montana State University where I work, like if there is no phone support, that campus would crawl to a grinding halt. And even the funny part is, even if they never, ever, ever use it, it's just this security blanket of, I can call someone and get a human, because email can be ignored, but my voice is loud and proud, and I hate it.
Right. I think the worst thing I ever invented was the automated phone systems where you have to talk, or even the button ones are bad too.
Yeah, but they're all pretty bad.
They never, I mean, it's never, when I'm calling support, I mean business. I'm never like, it's like, you know, calling FedEx or something. It's like, well, do you want to track a package? It's like, no, if I want to track a package, I know how to do that. I'll go on your website. It's like, it's funny.
Yeah.
But like you said, phone support is tough, because you kind of can't really see, if you're doing technical support, that is, you can't really see their screen, and you kind of have to describe it over the phone. And, and so we found, and we've talked about it in one of our episodes, LogMeIn Express. And I do some things on Skype as well, where in anything like this, if you can get the user screen, if you're doing technical support and you can get the user screen, it can make a world of difference.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, I was doing some app support at work, And I was really having a hard time understanding with this lady what was going wrong. Because, I mean, she was using, we had absolutely no common set of vocabulary whatsoever. And it was just to the point of, I was like, I have no clue what's going on. And so I finally was like, all right, well, can you work with me on this to get this screen sharing up so I can see what's happening? And log me in Express. And Skype is another really good one, because if you have Skype, it's really easy. You like connect to a call and you're like, share a screen. Boom, done. Where it's like, okay, then all it takes sometimes is seeing. And half the time it's like you just see it and you're like, oh, well, that's a really easy thing. But you would have spent 3 hours on the phone trying to describe that and figure out what it was when you could just do it in 10 minutes with screen sharing program.
Yeah, I don't want to get my users used to it, but sometimes I'm just like, you know what? After like 3 emails back and forth, I'm just like, you know what? Let's just do a Skype session real quick because I could probably fix this in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But I know it's bad because that can sometimes take up a lot of time doing phone support and real time, yeah. You know, like that people can kind of get used to that. And
yeah, you got to be careful, especially giving out your Skype number. All of a sudden, yeah, you'll be getting calls in the middle of the day. You're like, no.
And it's going on those same lines, you know, getting like something like Google Voice. If you're a single developer or you're freelancing, it's good to have some number that you can kind of turn off when you're off work hours.
Totally.
So here's a good example that I found on Joel on Software's blog about it was a Microsoft like support thing that they ran into. They found they had some people calling in, you know, as they do to Microsoft and support places. You know, the keyboard doesn't work, okay? Well, you know, we as tech guys know that keyboards don't really have a high failing rate.
Yeah,
it's not exactly. Like hard. There's not a whole lot that can go wrong with the keyboard. But they found if they just said, you know, oh, it's probably unplugged, can you please check it? They found, you know, people start all of a sudden getting angry because it's almost like an insult. It's like, well, of course it's not unplugged. It's
yeah,
it's got to be something else with your software, you know?
Yeah.
So they kind of tried some stuff and they reworded it and said, you know, for example, okay, well, it's sometimes the connection gets a little dusty. Can you please check by unplugging the connector, blow on it, and put it back in? And oftentimes the person will crawl under their desk and look around and be like, oh, it's not plugged in. Go plug it in. Like, oh, it works now. Thank you.
Yeah. So it goes back to that vocabulary thing of like, phone support is a very touchy thing in that we, you know, as support people, as programmers, tend to get, you know, kind of really upset at the person on the other end of the line because we feel they're insulting us or we feel that they didn't try hard enough and the first thing they did was call us without trying to do their due diligence. And it is just it can be a very volatile situation and things can escalate really easily. So thinking about your words, like even saying like, you know, oh, maybe sometimes things can get in the way of the connection, go back there and check it, you know, even though in the end, you know, that they'll go, oh man, it was unplugged. You know, think about your words. Don't be like, you know, did you try to put it in an array, you know, say, well, sometimes it gets, you know, put it on yourself or on the product. And just,
blame
you know,
yourself.
Try and not make it, you know, yeah, it may not make it sound like something is totally wrong, but be like, sometimes it, you know, it can get confused or the system acts really funky when you try and, you know, put in a date that is, you know, UTC minus 7 or something, you know, and that sort of diffuses the situation. And in the end, you'll feel a little bit better about it because you'll sort of get this attitude of like, you know, maybe it was wonky and it's not just that it's bad and it's wrong and it's broken.
Yeah, and in this example of the keyboard thing, the end result is the same. You just make a happier person. It's not as you know, mad at because you call them stupid by saying is it plugged in. It's funny. I just thought of it when I had some DSL issues and I remember calling tech support and I just remembered this example. They had me unplug it from the wall and reverse it. So like take the wall one, put it into the router or the modem and then put the modem into the wall. But in the end, really what they're trying to do is just make sure you have it plugged in.
Yeah.
They just want you to flip it.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of like the dust on the keyboard thing.
Yeah. Sometimes it's good to know your audience too, right? Because when I call phone support like for DSL stuff and they treat me like I'm an idiot. And I understand why they do because most people, there is a huge number of people using internet, high speed internet now that just don't really have a technical clue. and they don't, they shouldn't need to. But like when I call and they're like, plug it in from the wall and then plug, you know, reverse it, I am so mad.
I want to apply for like a card that gives me like the when I can call it, I can just like put a number in and they're like, they patch me on to like level 2.
Exactly. Exactly. like what's your name? Like Jade Robbins, comma, you know, expert C12. They're like, oh, okay, well, we should take you to level 12 support instead of this plug it in from the wall crap right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a toughie.
Some idea we could give them. Implement some software that keeps track of all that.
Exactly. Yeah, this keeps track of which support level the experts should get. All right, so guys, we want to hear your support stories and your support suggestions. Go to faceoffshow.com and tell us. I want to know if you have like a funny support story, or if you think we got something wrong, or you have another suggestion that we forgot to mention. Let us know. Go to faceoffshow.com. There's got to be some good ones out there. I know I've had some good stories. I can't really think of any right now. I should probably try and.
I have one real quick. When I used to work for the university, they were trying to plug their keyboard into the network socket, like the network, the Cat5 jack, RJ45. That was like the mother of all funny.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, we used to. it's funny that we were talking about diffusing language and stuff like that, and it's kind of funny the stuff that you get, because I worked support in the student computer labs here at MSU for the longest time, and I don't know how many times, you know, as tech people, we have the magic touch. Like, people will be so frustrated and they're like, hey, can you come help me? This has been happening to me for the past hour. Every time I click on this, it does this. You're like, okay, well, let me come over and take a look. And you come over and they're like, they click on this, and it doesn't do it every time. It's like, I had a coworker, Tig, who had the best magic touch ever. I don't think he ever answered a real support question the whole time he was there, because every time he walked over, it always worked.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys, you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Like I said, I want to hear your guys' thoughts on support and stories. Let us know. Thanks, guys. We will see you next week.